Chapter 2, Solution, Innovation Engineering Pedigree. My friend Patricio Morales from Monterrey, Mexico said, "We want sales and profits to grow forever. To do this, we need to innovate, to meet changes in the market with customers and competition. However, innovation requires change and entering the unknown. We hate change and the unknown. To avoid it, we must do it. However, when we must do it, it might be too late. I wish there was a way to make innovation projects as reliable as cost savings projects." Definition of a system. The innovation engineering movement defines a system, as Dr. Deming did, two or more independent parts with a common aim. In the case of an organization, this means two or more departments, that is parts, that work together toward a common organizational mission. Sadly, the average organization realizes less than the sum of their parts. They realize less than what each department delivers independently. This is because rather than optimizing their interaction with other departments for the good of the organization, each department's primary focus is on delivering their departmental metrics, no matter what the consequences to the organization as a whole. Good organizations are the sum of their parts. They realize an additive impact from the interaction of their departments. There is cooperation and collaboration between departments. The management of each department reacts to issues rapidly. They readily sacrifice short-term departmental results for the accomplishment of the overall mission of the organization. Great organizations are the product of their parts. They realize a multiplicative impact from the interactions of their departments. Employees anticipate customer needs and the needs of other departments. Good organizations innovate to problem-solve challenges when they arise. Great organizations anticipate issues and proactively innovate to take advantage of opportunities, lead market change, and prevent problems from developing. To move from an average or good organization to a great organization requires the engagement of leadership. This is because only the leadership of a team, department, division, or organization has a bigger picture understanding of both today and tomorrow. Dr. Deming wrote of the need to replace management with leadership. To paraphrase Dr. Deming, the job of management is one of prediction. It's about finding out what will help the customer in the future. It's about finding out how to get ahead of the customer. Leadership is about leading a team, department, or organization into the future. It's about making strategic choices on what products, services, and markets to invest resources in. It's also about investing in capability building, such as employee education, tools, and systems to enable team members to work smarter. In 1954, Peter Drucker wrote in his management classic, The Practice of Management, "It is not enough for the business to provide just any economic goods and services. It must provide better and more economic ones. It is not necessary for a business to grow bigger, but it is necessary that it constantly grow better. Every managerial unit of a business should have clear responsibility and definite goals for innovation. It should be responsible for its contribution to innovation in the company's product or service. And it should, in addition, strike consciously and with direction towards advancement of the art in the particular area in which it is engaged, be it selling, accounting, quality control, or personnel management." More recently, Kouzis and Posner wrote in their leadership classic, The Leadership Challenge, "Innovation and leadership are nearly synonymous. Leaders are innovators. Innovators are leaders. The focus of a leader's attention is less on the routine operations and much more on the untested and untried. Leaders are always asking, what's new? What's next? What's better? Full stop. Predicting the future is really hard." The paragraphs above make it seem easy to lead an organization in the future. It's not. It's very hard to set strategy for the future. That's because the future is unknown. When setting strategy, leaders always work with imperfect information. They make decisions on where competitors and customers are going to be in the future. I say this in my own defense. The students on campus like to remind me of the interview I did in 1999 for Inc. magazine. In it, I was asked what I thought about the internet. My response was, "The internet is a library. Before it existed, I didn't go to the library that often. Now that it exists, I don't go there any more than I went before. It's a great place to find eclectic facts, but its practicality and functionality are limited." It's fair to say that I've totally missed that one. And the internet's memory is very unforgiving. It's not possible to predict the future with precision. Fortunately, there are future mining tools that we teach, such as if-then scenarios, patent mining, and lead user immersions that can help leaders think smarter about the future. The idea for innovation engineering was first sparked on December 19, 1979. I had just returned home for the Christmas holiday from the University of Maine, where I was in my junior year studying chemical engineering. With a sense of urgency, my father, Merwin Bradford Buzzhall, sat me down in our living room. He said, "I learned something amazing this fall from a statistician named Dr. Deming. With manufacturing, it is well understood that you have a choice. You can either have high quality or low cost, but you can't have both. This fall, I've learned that you can have both if you apply system thinking to manufacturing." To be honest, my mind at the time was more on spending time with my high school girlfriend, who I would soon marry and spend my life with, than on hearing about some statistician. But Dad was not to be stopped. With an uncharacteristic passion, he said, "Doug, this is really important for you to understand. It's going to change the way companies are run. Deming's done it. He is the reason why the Japanese cars are so much better quality and Detroit is having so much trouble competing with them." The conversation with my dad got my attention. It made sense to me logically, but what really caught my attention was the emotion my dad expressed. As an engineering physics major, he was not prone to being emotional. Over that holiday, we talked more about what he had learned. He taught me the difference between special cause and common cause errors. He taught me about plan, do, study, act, cycles of learning. I didn't know it at the time, but that conversation would change the trajectory of my life and how I looked at the world. Applying Dr. Deming's teaching would be the secret to the success of my work at Procter & Gamble, my companies, my books, and even my approach to philanthropy. Years later, thanks to Larry Stewart, one of the earliest innovation engineering pioneers, I would have the honor of teaching innovation engineering in Powell, Wyoming, Dr. Deming's hometown. In Powell, I told the story of how my dad had taught me that you didn't have to make a choice. You could have high quality and low cost if you changed your system. I added, "I am here to teach you that when it comes to innovation, you also don't have to make a choice. You can have both increased innovation speed and decreased risk if you change your system of thinking." Procter & Gamble was the research lab for the new way of thinking. The country of Japan was where Dr. Deming's teachings were developed, refined, and made real. For innovation engineering, Procter & Gamble served a similar role. It started when, after graduating from the University of Maine, I took the path less traveled by chemical engineering graduates. Instead of taking an engineering job, I went to work for Procter & Gamble in their brand management department. As I look back, it's a miracle that Mark Upson hired me. I did not have the experience to do the job. Fortunately, Mark took a gamble on me because of my entrepreneurial energy. I'd created and sold Learn to Juggle and Magic Kits as a teenager and founded a promotional products company on 6 campuses when I was in college. Being a chemical engineer in a marketing job, fresh out of college, was a major shift in mindset. I found myself relying on the system thinking principles my dad was continuing to teach me. When I got tired of reworking budget charts by hand for the 100th time, I changed the system. I found a new computer program called VisiCalc, the first major spreadsheet. I wrote a one-page memo and got the first personal computer on a Procter & Gamble brand group, an Apple IIe. It enabled me to do budget chart changes in 95% less time than by punching a calculator. It also allowed more statistical analysis of business data. At the time, the office manager actually said to me, quote, "One day I can imagine one of these computers on every floor." I replied, "I can see one on every desk." He just shook his head. I applied systems thinking to strategy, finance, product development, package design, and promotion design. To the leadership of P&G, my non-traditional systems approach was both exciting and frustrating. Fortunately, most of the people I worked for were by nature system thinkers, who evaluated the whole and not simply the parts. My first boss had this to say about me. Her name was Barb Thomas. Were there times I wanted to strangle Doug? Absolutely. He was what I call a high-maintenance subordinate. You had to watch him like crazy. He'd be nodding at what I was saying, but his mind would be somewhere else. Linear, he's not. He's like a helicopter pilot. He sees the same thing you see, but from a different perspective. Doug's divergence paid off a number of times in the context of inventions that would not have been discovered simply by taking incremental steps forward from where we were. I was quickly promoted to brand manager. In the 1980s, the P&G brand manager job was like the chief engineer role at Toyota. I had the responsibility to lead the business of my brand, however, I had no authority over any of the departmental silos. As a brand manager, I was the hub of the wheel, leading the inevitable trade-offs required to move business building innovations from idea to reality. Being a P&G brand manager was the greatest job I've ever had. It is the inspiration for the project leader role designed into innovation engineering and explained in Chapter 8. The only difference is that today anyone in the company can take the role, whereas at P&G in the 1980s, it was filled exclusively by those in the marketing department. After a few years, I was offered the opportunity to become either the brand manager of Tide or to be the brand manager of a struggling and frankly failing innovation group in the food and beverage division. For me, it was an easy decision. Innovation was my passion. Soon, Eric Schultz joined the team. He fully bought into the idea of changing the world by changing the innovation system. He had faced the pain and suffering of the existing P&G innovation system that was designed to control rather than to enable innovation. Our starting place was to learn everything we could about innovation. We interviewed top experts, we read academic articles, and ran lots of experiments. We quickly learned that if it took 3 months to execute a learning cycle, concept, package, customer search, and analysis, we could only do 4 cycles in a year. So we changed the system. We invented a new system we called Rapid Test, that enabled us to create, test, and report results from 4 cities in 7 days. Today, the rapid test system is even faster. As you will learn in Chapter 10, companies today can simultaneously test in 4 continents and painlessly get results in hours. And thus was born the P&G Invention Team. I was soon promoted to Associate Advertising Manager, Director of Marketing at other companies. I insisted that we have no budget. We would cross-charge business units for our work. The result was we ended up making quite a profit, which was a real problem for the finance department, as staff groups were not supposed to be profitable. Demand for our services was greater than Eric and I could provide. Instead of hiring more people, we became very good at collaborating. You will learn more about how to accelerate collaboration in Chapter 10. We worked with partners who understood system thinking. Big companies, small companies, citizen inventors, and university professors. These external collaborations multiplied our capacity and were a raw and rough version of Connect and Develop that P&G would make famous in later years. The finance department did an audit of our effectiveness. They compared projects of similar complexity. They found that our P&G invention team took a product to market with 10% of the staff in 16% of the time and at 18% of the cost of a similar project using the traditional system. It wasn't that we were any smarter. It was because we upgraded the existing system to enable us to work faster and more effectively. Sadly, the person responsible for managing me at the time didn't get it. Incorrectly, he wrote in my last personnel review that I had a special gift. I didn't. The secret to my success then as now was systems thinking. He wrote, "Doug brings an extraordinary degree of creativity, entrepreneurial instinct, and energy to his work. He has brought 8 product concepts from invention to shipping, all within the past year, with a 9th project soon to follow. This has to be something of a record." The next part of the review was not so positive. He wrote, "Doug has just one key opportunity for improvement. He needs to treat the system with more respect. He takes almost malicious pleasure in beating the system by developing new product concepts faster and cheaper than if work were done through traditional channels. It does not help to rub people's noses in their inefficiencies, their cost of operation, or their tortoise-like speed. Finally, and of much lesser importance, Doug has a too low tolerance for paperwork, memo writing, budgeting, and similar administrative errata, which, until successfully addressed, will limit his effectiveness in conventional management assignments. It would take me another 20 years to realize that the most valuable advice in this review was the second part. I was using upgraded systems to beat the system, but not treating the existing system with respect. The art department wasn't wrong when they protested my renegade actions, nor was product development, regulatory, or the legal departments when I broke existing rules. What I didn't understand was that true system thinkers work within the system to improve the system. Rubbing people's noses in their inefficiencies, their cost of operations, or their tortoise-like speed is not appropriate. The problem is the systems, not the people. Eric has gone on to do amazing things at Disney, Coca-Cola, and other places. Like me, he has moved to teaching. He currently teaches marketing at Utah State University, where he has incorporated system thinking into solving marketing problems. His students have no idea how lucky they are to have him teaching them. The creation of an innovation guru. After 10 years at Procter & Gamble, I looked up one January 1st and realized my growth had stopped. So I decided it was time to retire from corporate life and start my own company. With 3 credit cards for financing, our family basement as the office, and Debbie 5 months pregnant with our 3rd child, I founded what is known today as the Eureka Ranch. The company's purpose was to turn innovation from a random gamble to a reliable system. However, in the 1990s, the business world was not ready for system-driven innovation. Innovation was the practice of creative gurus. So in a fraudulent move, I marketed myself as a guru. I say fraudulent because the truth was my so-called expertise was actually powered by smarter systems for finding, filtering, and fast-tracking fresh ideas. But marketing myself as a guru worked. The media and clients bought it. A&E Top 10 named me America's number one idea guru. Inc. Magazine called me America's number one new product idea man. The Wall Street Journal wrote, "Former Procter & Gamble marketing whiz Doug Hall goes to any length to encourage a fresh perspective. Clients say it works." Dateline NBC, "Doug Hall is an eccentric entrepreneur who just might have what we've all been looking for, the happy secret to success." And Ellen Gadara, vice president at Walt Disney, "When Doug meets Disney, creativity never wanes. Our team explodes when he jumpstarts our brains." Clients came from around the world to work with the guru at the Eureka Ranch, just outside of Cincinnati, Ohio. 88% of our business was repeat. We worked with the best and brightest at innovation at the time. Procter & Gamble, Nike, Disney, American Express, Hewlett-Packard, Ford, Pepsi-Cola, Frito-Lay, Schlumberger, as well as thousands of other consumer and industrial companies around the world. We worked with companies that were desperate. Sadly, when they reached out to us, it was often too late. That was the case with the original AT&T. Blockbuster, Circuit City, Maytag, Chrysler, and Gillette. We worked with each of these companies within a year of them ceasing to exist as independent companies. Data drives success. Working with clients at the Eureka Ranch provided a real-world laboratory for further developing and refining the application of system thinking to innovation. Every Eureka Inventing project is a live R&D experiment that adds to our wisdom. Our research is not always as controlled as academic research. However, what we lose in controlled experimentation, we gain in marketplace realness. We measure real people working on real projects that are really important to them and their organization. The result is the largest database of real-world data on innovation in the world. This hard data, statistically analyzed, is the reason the innovation engineering system can promise increased innovation speed up to 6x and decreased risk by up to 80%. The data includes 1. Innovation perceptions and beliefs from hundreds of thousands of adults. 2. Real-time quantitative data on over 15,000 innovation teams in the process of innovating. 3. Quantitative research on over 25,000 innovations. And 4. Comprehensive project data, idea, forecast, learning, on over $75 billion worth of innovations as they travel the journey from idea to market. Learning from this research, plus reviewing over 2,000 academic articles, was the basis for my books, Jumpstart Your Business Brain, Meaningful Marketing, and Jumpstart Your Brain 2.0. Together, these books lay out the research methodologies and the foundational principles of innovation engineering. The new learning opens new doors and lays the foundation for innovation engineering. The quantitative research improved the effectiveness of Eureka Ranch client projects. It also opened up new opportunities. In May 2001, Graham Crombie from the consultancy group Matrix in Glasgow engaged Maggie Nichols and myself to teach our systems approach to innovation in Scotland. Today, Graham and his team use innovation engineering to help companies across Scotland and Ireland. On a less significant note, it opened up opportunities for me to serve as a judge on the first season of ABC TV's reality TV program, American Inventor. And in Canada, I hosted another reality TV program with Maggie Nichols and Maggie Pfeiffer of the Eureka Ranch called Backyard Inventor. The rigor and originality of the research also caught the eye of the leadership of the University of Maine and the University of Prince Edward Island, each of which presented me with honorary doctorate degrees. The University of Maine was so excited that President Bob Kennedy, with the support of Hemet Pensey, Jake Ward, and Renee Kelly, committed to an experimental course in innovation. During the fall of 2005, the first innovation engineering was caught at the University of Maine with Margot Lukens, Daryl Donahue, and Liz Downing teaching 9 pioneering students. In 2009, I took a sabbatical from the Eureka Ranch and lived on campus to help build version 1.0 of the innovation engineering courses. On December 10, 2009, following an event in Freeport, Maine with business owners, it became clear that innovation engineering had to move from the campus to the business world. On a conference call with Renee Kelly of the University of Maine and Maggie Nichols and Scott Dunkel of the Eureka Ranch, the innovation engineering movement as a commercial leadership science was born. During January of 2010, at the Sugarloaf Ski Resort, we ran the first 3-day Innovation Engineering Leadership Institute. The program was raw and rough. Despite that, the reactions from CEOs of large and small companies in attendance was overwhelmingly positive. The response we received at Sugarloaf indicated that the world was ready for system-driven innovation. To be honest, I also think we got lucky. As the recession of 2008 had opened up leadership to the need to do something different, they knew they needed to innovate, and frankly, the guru approach wasn't working for them with its 5 to 15% success rate. The innovation engineering curriculum. With the support of what would become known as the Innovation Engineering Pioneers, a full body of knowledge was defined that was both academically rigorous and industry relevant. There are 48 critical skills, each with 2 to 4 sub-skills. Today, 6 courses are taught: Fundamentals, Advanced Create, Advanced Communicate, Advanced Commercialize, System-Driven Leadership, and Innovation Engineering Experience. Details on the current curriculum can be found at innovationengineering.org/curriculum. I haven't included it here, as it undergoes never-ending innovation, as all college courses should. We upgrade and improve each course each year based on new data, analysis, and the frontline experience of the innovation engineering community. Scheduling challenges and the high cost of college courses can make it a challenge for students to complete the 6 courses. To reach the maximum number of students, the first course, Fundamentals, was designed to provide a functional knowledge of the 4 fundamental skills of creating, communicating, and commercializing innovations. Students completing the Fundamentals course at a high standard are certified as Innovation Engineering Blue Belts. Upon completing all classes on campus, students graduate with an Innovation Engineering minor or a graduate certificate. They also have the option of becoming a certified Innovation Engineering Black Belt. Off campus, frontline employees, managers, and executives are taught the same content as on campus, but in a compressed format that integrates the learning with direct application to their real-world work. The Innovation Engineering Network offers 2 programs of training, coaching, and certification. Innovation Engineering Blue Belt enables fundamental understanding. It teaches employees, managers, and leaders how to apply the innovation engineering mindset and methods to their personal and professional life immediately. Innovation Engineering Black Belt enables mastery of the innovation engineering system-driven innovation mindset. It enables them to bust bureaucratic systems and enable big ideas. Classically, IE Black Belts focus their work on leading very important projects or teaching other employees, managers, and leaders. A new way of learning, cycles to mastery. Jake Ward of the University of Maine first identified that we needed to develop both a great curriculum and a new way of learning. Creating a new way of learning was especially important because, as a new field of study, there is not a base of faculty who have the breadth and depth of experience with system-driven innovation. 2 years of R&D later, a new system of teaching was born and branded as Cycles to Mastery. Its purpose is to enable all who are willing to achieve mastery of innovation engineering. It's based on iterative cycles of learning. It blends 1, the work of Benjamin Bloom on the 2-sigma problem, 2, formative assessment, 3, Deming PDSA cycles, 4, quality control charting, 5, flipped classroom, and 6, competency-based learning. It involves 5 different types of classes. Digital class. These classes involve short 5 to 7 minute videos that cover the core content of the innovation engineering subskills. Interactive quizzes feed forward what students have learned and not learned to the instructor so that adaptations can be made in the next class. Lab class. The digital content is made real through group and individual assignments in which students get hands-on understanding of the content. Feedback loops provide grading of each assignment. Each student is given the opportunity to resubmit till they achieve success. The percent correct on each assignment is fed forward to the instructor so that the next class can be modified appropriately. Application class. Students are challenged to put the sub-skill learning into a broader context. Students apply the new learning plus prior learning on realistic scenarios or challenges. Reflection class. Students write a reflection on what they have learned and how they can apply it in their lives. This solidifies learning at a deeper level. And lastly, experience class. These are real-world challenges. They use to bring the learning to life. Off campus, the experience class involves coaching the student and applying the learning to their daily work. On campus, the experience is flexible. It can be part of an internship. It can be creating a new invention, starting a company, or leading an innovation project for the university that the student attends. Cycles to Mastery has been shown to generate 200 to 400% increases in the number of students achieving mastery levels versus the classic teaching approach. Multiple learning experiences take the student from intellectually knowing to deeply understanding the skills. When we teach innovation engineering on college campuses, the students get rich repetition. Off campus, we accomplish repetitions by coaching the student as they apply the learning to their projects. Ken Greer, creative director for the McAllen and an innovation engineering black belt, feels that applying to his work was the most valuable part of his learning. Quote, "The forced rigor of actually doing it, practicing it, getting coaching feedback was 70% of my learning." Ken's observation of the importance of hands-on application was confirmed by Deming master Walter Werner. Education begins when you leave school, not while you are there. The classroom is not the hard part, not even close. The most exciting part of Cycles to Mastery is that it includes a system for never-ending increases in the mastery standard. Control charts identify when the classes are so effective that student learning has risen above control limits. This signifies it's time to increase the difficulty of assignments and therefore raise the mastery standards. In effect, Cycles to Mastery delivers learning inflation instead of grade inflation. On campus, students give enthusiastic support for the Cycles to Mastery teaching method. Here are some quotes. How is this better? Less stress. This approach allows the information to stick in your head so you don't forget it. The applying is the important part that makes it stick. No more information regurgitation. Failing isn't a bad thing here. You lose your fear of failing here because it's okay. Because you are doing live grading, it's like the instructors are working with us, not against us. I've always struggled with regular lectures, and I am always wondering if I'm really learning. But with this, I feel I am actually learning and actually building skills. Compared to old classes, here you are learning a new way to think, not just the content. Working on changing the mind instead of cramming it with information. And lastly, this is the best thing that ever happened to any college. In retrospect, the decision to invest the time, energy, and money to invent a new system of teaching is probably the most important decision we have made. It enabled us to have a scalable system for truly democratizing innovation across entire companies, countries, and cultures. Quite simply, if you are willing, you will be made able to master the innovation engineering body of knowledge. We have successfully taught artists, scientists, engineers, economists, politicians, lawyers, accountants, musicians, and even poets. We are so confident in the teaching system that we offer an ironclad guarantee. If you are willing, we will make you able. You are guaranteed achieving mastery if you put in the time and follow the Cycles to Mastery methodology. Innovation Engineering 1.0, 2.0, and 3.0. The development of the Innovation Engineering system has followed the same principles we teach. It's been an iterative process of experimentation, learning, adapting, and improving. The support of thousands of managers has made it possible. Today, there are over $16 billion worth of live and active projects being run around the world by the innovation engineering community. To help you understand how innovation engineering got to where it is today, I've included below a quick history of the major upgrades to innovation engineering, or IE as we call it. As I said earlier, if you're already bought in, feel free to jump to the end of this chapter. IE 1.0, accelerating the front end of innovation. The first version of education and tools was a system focused on discovering and selecting smarter innovations to put into the organization's existing development system. Students were supported by IELabs.com, a cloud-based internet portal that, in the case of IE 1.0, helped them create and communicate bigger and smarter ideas. The most valuable section of IE Labs 1.0 was tools and documentation. This was a toolbox of create, communicate, and commercialize tools, plus step-by-step how-to guides for how to run projects. Today, this section continues to be one of the most popular parts of IE Labs. With IE 1.0, organizations quickly went from having a lack of ideas to overflowing with ideas for growing their business. This created a backlog of projects. To deal with it, business executives challenged us to find ways to apply the system mindset all the way to market. And this led to IE 2.0, a complete system from idea through development to reality. The move from simple idea creation to the actual work of commercializing innovations required significant upgrades in education and tools. To ensure fast startup, IE 2.0 software tools were designed to work outside of the box with no setup required. Then, as teams work with the software, it becomes more intelligent and customized. Major IE 2.0 upgrades included Innovation Pipeline. A next-generation project management system was created based on rapid cycles of iterative learning, instead of the classic command and control. It's a smart system that painlessly enables strategic alignment, deeper thinking, and fact-based decision-making. Merwin Rapid Research. This is a suite of research tools that result in 10x faster testing at 7% of the cost of classic research methods. This means project leaders can make faster decisions based on hard data instead of judgment. The suite includes an artificial intelligence coaching app, risk-adjusted sales forecasting, and a smart idea screener that's been validated as being 7 times smarter at evaluating innovations than business leaders at even Fortune 100 corporations. Collaboration Cafe. This is a digital suggestion box system that leverages the latest in psychological understanding of what ignites and constrains collaboration. The result is smarter ideas and decisions because more people are sharing more ideas and advice. Patent ROI, a collection of tools that enable project leaders to mine 9 million public domain patents for idea inspirations, to find 250,000 flea market patents per year that can be bought cheaply, and to write a provisional patent application in about an hour. Create, communicate, and commercialize tools, nearly 100 tools that enable everyone to think smarter, faster, and more creatively about ideas. IE 3.0, a scalable system for enabling a culture of innovation. With IE 1.0, we were primarily enabling specialist innovation managers. With IE 2.0, taking ideas to market, we quickly found that we were touching many people across the company. And if they didn't have the new innovation mindset, they didn't always understand why we were pushing for innovations that often change what they do and how they do it. What was needed was a system for enabling a culture of innovation. With IE 3.0, we developed programs that enabled managers to quickly apply innovation engineering to their daily work. For example, if they are a team leader, we encourage them to innovate on ideas for helping their team work smarter immediately. IE Labs 3.0 added other important upgrades, innovation metrics. This is a dashboard of real-time innovation metrics. They help leaders identify the output of their innovation system and the status of their innovation culture. New survey instruments enable leaders to understand how future-proof their organization is for the new world. Diagnostic data helps identify where to focus energy to improve the innovation system and culture. Classroom upgrade. A new Innovation Engineering Blue Belt, or also known as Quick Start course, was added to the curriculum. Dozens of how-to and two-hour workshops were added to provide functional how-to learning to help people on a real-time basis. System-driven leadership courses. This advanced course was totally rebuilt to greater leverage the Deming system of profound knowledge. A new 4-step process for busting bureaucratic systems was developed from Dr. Deming's work to help leaders deal with complex system challenges. IE 4.0. a personal version of innovation engineering. Our hopes are to engage an entire department, division, or organization in the new mindset. However, often the broader organization is not ready to change. IE 4.0 is about enabling each individual to use the tools and systems of innovation engineering to amplify their dreams, aspirations, and career. A new software platform named ThinkStormer enables individuals to apply the IE mindset and methods very, very quickly with near instant results. Changing the world. We are confident that we will change the world by enabling innovation by everyone, everywhere, every day. What we don't know is how long it'll take. It took 30 years for Dr. Deming's teachings in Japan to be recognized in the Western world. But no matter how long it takes, we, the innovation engineering pioneers, the Innovation Engineering Institute organizing body, and myself, are in for the duration. The reason we are confident that we will change the world is that we have a plan A and a plan B. Plan A is to teach baby boomers and older Gen Xers who are currently in positions of authority the innovation engineering mindset of system-driven innovation. Plan B is teaching undergraduate and graduate students on college campuses around the world. As I tell them, if plan A doesn't work, you are my backup plan. You're just going to have to do a takeover. I'd love to say innovation engineering was the result of a grand vision, but that's not how it happened. It was created by a group of pioneers with the feeling that there had to be a better way to innovate. The movement was helped by the availability of massive volumes of quantitative data on innovations. However, the real key to success was a never-ending curiosity to learn more. And it is this passion for learning that is the key to our past and current success. As Dr. Deming said, it's so easy to do nothing. It's a challenge to do something. Learning is not compulsory, it's voluntary. Improvement is not compulsory, it's voluntary. But to survive, we must learn. The penalty for ignorance is that you get beat up. But there is no substitute for knowledge. Yet time is of the essence. So let's get started with education on some basic innovation definitions. But first, what did you learn? What systems do you work with that are world class? What systems do you work with that are barriers to your speed and success? How focused are you and your organization on the future? What is likely to happen in the future that you are not confronting reality on? What stops you from using data to help make smarter decisions? What is the learning process that your company uses to train people? In what areas are you smarter today than you were a year ago? And what should you focus your learning on right now?